Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
The show, sponsored by Straight Realty, your St. Louis area experts. Why pay more than four? 314-441-4444.
Welcome, my friends, to the show that never ends.
This is The Show.
Come inside, the show's about to start.
Now, Kevin Wheeler, Amy Marks-Kors, Chris Ronji on KMOX.
Awesome to be with you. We got a busy schedule today. We're going to hit on some Cardinals a little bit later on with John Rooney. We've got more on the January 6th hearings. I'm sure we'll have a little bit more on the Greitens ad. Certainly good guest day for today as well. I mentioned John Rooney's going to join us. Linda Kenyon from CBS is going to join us as well. We'll get an update there on January 6th and on the potential gas tax holiday. So we'll be talking about all of that and a whole bunch of silly stuff as well. If you want to keep up with us, go to at the show KMOX on Twitter. All the links to everything you would need are there. You can listen live on Odyssey, 98.7 FM, 1120 AM, Facebook.com/KMOX1120, YouTube.com/KMOX1120, and of course the text line, 436-7900, the voicemail line, 944-1120, both of those in the 314. Morning, gang.
Good morning. That's so much friends. Information.
So we're following total information AM. I'm trying to keep up.
I wonder if anybody's writing down what you're saying at the beginning. You know, kind of like keeping score at home. Does anybody do that anymore?
Tracking it? Like you're keeping score of the baseball game?
Right.
I would doubt it.
How many people do you think actually keep score now? Because I don't see it at ball games much.
Yeah. It's probably a little less of a thing because you just pull up the app on your phone and you've got the box score in front of you.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think that's a legitimate difference. When I was a kid, I loved keeping score, but I didn't have any box score in front of me if I didn't do that during the game. So if I was trying to remember what happened in the third inning, because I was a dork and I was 10, I'm like, I want to know everything and remember everything. And now I would just be like, my phone's got it. I don't have to write all that stuff down.
It's the best when you don't have to write stuff down
or
remember things. It's totally great.
Well,
can I, real quick, before we get into the real meat of the day, I got to tell you, Kevin, a thing that Amy did.
Oh, my gosh.
I got to tell you about this. This is just fantastic. So my mom is down the street at her. My mom is down the street at visiting with her friend in Granite City. And she's talking about the show and, you know, talking about you guys. And she says,
how brilliant we are. And
yeah, probably.
Yeah. Wish we help you and, you know, you need us in your life.
Wish Kevin
that.
Would shut the hell up.
Yeah,
wish Amy would shut the hell up. And it should just be my son.
I feel like Mrs. Ronji didn't say that.
No, she did not. But anyway, she's talking about the two of you. And she mentions Amy's last name. And her friend says, I went to church with a Ben and Jeanette Marks-Kors, like years ago, decades ago.
So
I texted Amy and I said, Amy, do you know Ben and Jeanette?
Marks-Kors.
Marks-Kors.
Right.
And she says, no, I don't.
I did not say,
are you related? I said, do you know of these people?
Listen, do I have to subpoena you guys and get your text messages?
You can. Fine. Go ahead. You don't even have to subpoena T-Mobile. I'll just give them to you. So she says, no, I don't. And then a couple of minutes go by and she goes, those are my grandparents.
No.
So true story.
First of all,
I need to see the text.
Okay.
It happened.
He said, you related to a Ben and Jeanette. And I said,
no.
Not that I know.
This person forgot her own grandparents.
I said, why? Like all Marks-Kors are related somehow, distant cousins. Then I doubled down. He goes, my mom's friend went to a Catholic church years ago in St. Louis and she knew them. I said, Well, I don't know Ben.
Well, you didn't know. Maybe you just knew him as Grandpa Marks-Kors.
But my grandma was Jeanette, Mark scores. Maybe it was my grandma. I was like, I was thinking now, and Ron said, did she go to a Catholic church? It would have been a long time ago, like 20 or 30 years ago. And then I said, yes, oh my gosh, I bet she means my grandma and grandpa Bill and Jeanette.
I mean, come on. Come on, Amy.
So because of the one name switch, that threw her off completely.
It's one little detail. Uh-huh. One little detail and she's gone. Just absolutely gone.
I mean, I'm laughing now, but I've done that. Not that exact conversation, but I have done something very much like that. Probably 1,000 times.
I don't think there's any chance I've been. Well, I don't know, maybe. But that's pretty amazing.
That's like, do you know a Chris Longy?
No idea.
I have no idea.
But I wasn't even that far off. Like, it was very, very close.
Yeah, it was Ben and Jeanette. Mark scores. No. And you would think the Jeanette would have made me say, you know what? I think that's my grandma.
How many Jeanette Mark scores could there be in the St. Louis
like
area?
Zero.
Well, there's one. I mean, right?
Yeah, all Mark scores. Well, she passed away. But yes, all Mark scores are related somehow.
Is that for real?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like going back to the old country?
Yep. They didn't, because they Mark scores did not change their name when they came over from Germany in the 1800s. Like, a lot of times you'll make it a little bit easier to spell or say, but well, that's why we have...
Or they misunderstood it and just wrote down something else.
That's why my name is spelled the way it is. Yeah.
No, but we have the X and the K right next to each other. So if there's a Mark scores, I may not know them because it was a big Catholic family with lots of cousins, but they're really concentrated in St. Louis and... they're related somehow. And in fact, the Mark scores who stayed in Germany, those were the wealthy Mark scores, and the poor Mark scores came to America to start life
anew.
Looking for a better life. Heinz came over to a family reunion, Heinz Mark scores, and we were able to trace it. It was very cool.
What is Wheeler? Is that Scottish or something?
It's an English name.
It is English. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it can be anywhere in the UK, in the United Kingdom, but it's an English surname. What do you think my ancestors did? what do you think their profession
your
was?
You worked on wagons?
They made wheels.
That's so cute.
Why is that?
I don't know. It just seems like
It's like all the names, right? Smith. Yeah. You're Smith because you were the Smith. You worked on metal. You made horseshoes and such.
My ancestors made wheels.
That's what they did.
I don't know why. That's just funny.
They were the wheelers.
It's just a funny thing to say.
What if you invented the wheel?
I did.
Yeah. You probably reinvented it.
No, he reinvents it every day.
Yeah.
Every single day.
Not every day, but every week or two.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Every week or two.
My
yours is like supposed to be.
It's Ranger. It's spelled Ranger. It's French.
Right.
Yes. And so I had relatives that settled. Well, they came here to this area. Then they ended up settling near Bon Terre, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And when they bought land, it was spelled whoever they couldn't write in English because they were French. And so the clerk, whoever filled out the paperwork,
by the way, like, do you know the French translation of what it's supposed to be?
I do not. Do you?
What do you think it is?
Wait. How is it spelled originally?
R-A-N, like Ranger,
like the word Ranger.
Yeah.
But it's pronounced Ranger. So somebody at Ellis Island or whatever is like, okay, this is R-O-N-G-E-Y.
It was the clerk who filled it out here, and that's why it's R-O-N-G-E-Y because that's the way it sounded to him.
Do you know like the direct translation of that word is?
Land.
Like, what would you think it is?
Butthole. I don't know. What is it?
It is not that, although you definitely pushed it in that direction. It means to put things away.
Put things away.
So your ancestors put things away, I guess.
They were organizers. They were the original closet company.
That's so weird because I am very disorganized.
Wow.
Yeah, really?
You're letting down your ancestors. Their progeny is a big disappointment.
I wonder if like maybe that was somebody that like took care of households. Like, put things in their proper place, to put things away, that's what it means, like, to arrange things.
Well, I put you guys in your place all the time. Is that what that means?
I mean, that could
maybe
be.
Maybe you were like a dog catcher. So you would pick
probably,
up
I'm a dog
stray
wrangler.
Things
yeah.
and put them, you know, away.
Makes sense.
Wow.
Makes sense. All right, etymology over.
Now everybody knows all about us.
Mm-hmm. Much to their dismay.
Our familial history.
Yes.
Yeah, all my peeps from... both England and Ireland.
We made wheels. I don't know why that's
craft.
Funny to me. It really is.
A lot of the English names are just what you did for a living.
That's right. They weren't very clever.
I mean, I don't think you really had to be. It's like John's the Smith, so he's John Smith.
I mean, the fact that his name is Wheeler, and these are the same people, the English, who found or just made their way to America and were like, what should we call this? New Hampshire and New England.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We're not going to bear.
Hey, we weren't in charge. We were just making the wheels.
Well, but it's, you know, your people.
Yeah.
And
we,
you guys.
We did trace this back. My wife did this. We were like early on, like the Wheelers were some of the first people to settle.
Really?
In the U.S.
Oh.
Not on like the
that's kind of cool.
Not the first wave, but like not long after.
Well, think about it this way, Kevin.
So we were probably poor too. Just like, let's get the hell out of here.
Your people never would have been here without those wheels.
Well, they didn't take the wheels across the ocean.
Funny story.
But they had to build them when they got here.
Then, true. Funny story. Guy played basketball. Guy played basketball in my college. I had friends who were on the team and they told me this story. They were taking a preseason trip to Hawaii to play a tournament. And this dude sincerely raised his hand and said, are we taking the bus?
Answer would be no.
Not to Hawaii, as far as we know. It's an expensive bridge.
Local news and information direct to your smart speaker. Just say, play KMOX.
Coming up at 11 o'clock here on the show, we'll be bringing in Linda Kenyon, a CBS reporter. We'll get an update on what's going on with the January 6th hearings and probably do a little bit on the gas tax holiday proposal as well. In the meantime, we've got a few other things to do, and we want to kind of bring you some of the more interesting points from the hearing yesterday. We're really going to focus on one thing from yesterday. And by the way, Kevin, Chris, and Amy with you here on the show on KMOX. And I don't know what you guys thought, but I thought some of the video that we saw, and it wasn't really at the hearing, it was just related to the hearing, was Ron Johnson being asked about, what would we call it? I don't want to say an incident because it really wasn't that, but how about a text conversation on January
6th? A text exchange
between Ron Johnson's chief of staff and a staff member. I don't remember if it was the chief of staff, but it was a staff member for Mike Pence.
Yeah.
And the text goes along these lines, and it is from it's this text messaging, and this is what they showed on the hearing last night. So this was presented as a part of the hearing yesterday, showing that the staffer for Ron Johnson texts the staffer for Mike Pence and says, "We have something that Johnson needs to hand to the vice president." I think I'm paraphrasing, but that's the simple version of it. And okay, here you go. I'll give you the exact words. It said, Johnson needs to hand something to V. POTUS, please advise. And this is at 12:37 p.m. on January 6th. And that guy's name is Sean Riley. He works for Ron Johnson. Chris Hodgson works for Mike Pence. His response was, well, what is it? And then the reply to that was, it's an alternate state of electors for Michigan and Wisconsin because the archivist didn't receive them. And then Chris Hodgson's reply was, do not give that to him. Mm-hmm. So what we have is the staffer on Ron Johnson's side of things saying, we have this document. It is an alternate slate of electors. No legitimate such thing existed. Mm-hmm. That's fake. That did not exist. There was no legitimate alternate slate of electors. They were trying to give a fake slate of electors to the vice president on January 6th. And on the committee hearings, they showed the copies of the real slate of electors next to the fake one, and they don't look anything alike. I mean, they're completely different formats, paper, the whole deal. One looks very formal and very very governmental, and the other one looks like a high school kid created it on Word.
You know, as we talk about the January 6th hearings and we say, well, a lot of the stuff isn't new, I feel like more and more of it is new. Is it surprising? Not in the sense that it's unbelievable. It's surprising in the sense that you can talk about something, but like we've said before, until you see the pictures of it, until you actually see what that looked like as it played out, it doesn't hit you the magnitude of, oh my gosh, they were quite literally wanting to hand the vice president of the United States fraudulent an electorate. And when I saw that text exchange, my first question is, well, when does this go into criminal activity where it's not just, wow, that's in poor taste, that's unpalatable.
Or they just tried really hard.
They
you know
just
what I mean?
Like, tried right, really right, hard. Right. This is criminal in my mind. How is this not criminal?
Well, I don't know the criminality of it. Clearly, none of us are attorneys, and we would be better suited asking one what the actual criminality of these actions are. I think, first of all, what we're getting is details. And globally, I think we've all kind of known what's happened or what was going on around the time of all of this. But what this hearing has done is slowly but surely given us some details. Like, here are some exact details and here are receipts of what was going on, who was doing what, and to what extent they were doing it. As for then now punishment, which I think is it's going to be the most important thing. People, I don't know who, I don't know what they could prove as far as the president goes or the former president. I don't know if they could prove, here or with John Eastman or whatever, but there has to be repercussions beyond just a hearing happening and airing out all of this stuff that now we know. People have to be punished. They have to be punished so it isn't tried again. There's no way, if you believe in this democracy, there's no way it can go on if people do not suffer consequences and there is not deterrent for it happening again, or for people putting people in place who might help them do it more successfully the next time around. I think we all have to come to the agreement that there's just no way we can allow that to happen. And the first step in this, maybe the hearing is the first step, but the second and most important step is people of importance have to be punished for this.
Now, after the hearings yesterday, after things wrapped up, there were reporters that followed Ron Johnson to get his explanation for that text exchange. So what did you know? Did you know what it was? Who was involved, all of that. So here's what Ron Johnson had to say.
We called him up. He didn't want it, and we didn't deliver it.
Why did you even offer it without vetting it?
We got handed an envelope that was full score of the vice president. I didn't know. So we called out the vice president. He didn't want it. We didn't deliver it. It's not a story. Guys, this is such a non-story.
Are you going to ask who got it?
When you had received the envelope? Pardon? Was that the first you had heard of it when you received the envelope? And who, do you remember who gave it to you?
It was a staff-to-staff deal. I mean, it apparently had Michigan and Wisconsin. I had no hand in any of it. Some staff intern, said, we got to, the vice president needs this or whatever. I wasn't involved. I don't know what they said, but somebody from the House delivered it to a staff member in my office, my chief of staff, called the vice president, hey, we got this. And the vice president said, don't deliver it. We didn't.
Are you curious about the identity of this person? Are you curious about the identity of this person? Do you want to ask about
it? No, because there's no conspiracy here. This is a complete non-story, guys.
As we listen to that and Johnson saying, we were handed this envelope, is there a possibility that Johnson and his staff, there is no culpability that lies with them, but it's someone else and they were an innocent middleman that was supposed to deliver this message? Or is it assumed that this originated somehow with Johnson and his contacts?
Well, it is possible that somebody gave it to them.
Sure.
But the chief of staff in texting Mike Pence's guy says it's an alternate state slate of electors. They knew what it was.
Right.
Ron Johnson is saying he didn't know what it was. So is that plausible?
Maybe, but unlikely.
I wouldn't think so. But again, you never know.
It's possible.
Yeah. I'm not trying to convict anybody. But what was interesting to me about that explanation, it starts off with a we, then it moves to a staffer, and then it moves to a staff intern. Every time he referred to the person or the exchange, the people got less and less important every time he referred to it. But also, would you want your chief of staff to offer something up to the vice president while an election is being certified that you don't know what it is?
I don't. If it's
me. And again, they knew what it was because it's mentioned in the text exchange. They knew it was an alternate slate of electors.
If it's me and that's my position, I can't have a guy like that working for me. I can't, because I can't be a party to it. Because if I am, I'm putting myself at jeopardy.
And
I'm putting my own career at
risk.
Later
on, he was asked, is he still your chief of staff or something like that? He didn't answer any of that.
Right.
But let me pose the last part to you guys, because we heard the explanation. At first, it was basically saying, I didn't know what was in the envelope. Okay, possible. Maybe not plausible, but certainly possible. I didn't know it, but when we called them, they said no, end of story, no big deal. And then he was asked at the very end, don't you want to know who tried to pass that information through you to the vice president, because again, the message that was sent by Johnson's chief of staff said Johnson needs to hand something to V. POTUS. This wasn't, hey, something was given to us that we that they asked if we would pass it along. Right. This is saying my guy, quote unquote, needs to hand something to the vice president at 12:37 p.m. on January 6th. Yeah. So again, let's even if we assume that nobody in Johnson's office knew anything was wrong with it, you're asked that question at the end. Wouldn't you want to know who tried to use you to deliver that to the vice president on that day?
I'm deeply incredulous that Johnson has no curiosity regarding the source, because if someone delivered a box of donuts to Wheeler and I didn't know who the donuts were from, wouldn't you be like, man, who sent Wheeler these donuts?
I probably wouldn't investigate, but I would want to know.
You would want to know. So I'd be like, oh, wow, that was nice. How can you not have any interest in who came up with this alternate electorate?
Especially if you believe in the institution of office dynamics, you know? I should want to know where the donuts came from.
Not to mention, these are powerful people. I don't think they're ignoring details.
They better not be.
Find out what's happening with your Redbirds from the map.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Himself, Oliver Marmol. Sundays at 10:15 on Sports Open Line.
And Wednesday mornings at 9:50.
The Ollie Marmol Show.
I'm excited for not only the club, but for the fans. This is a special year for sure.
On KMOX.
All right, it's Wednesday on the show here on KMOX. Amy Marks, of course, Chris Ronji, Kevin Wheeler with you here. Got a little baseball talk coming up a little later on with John Rooney. Obviously, more breaking news on the day, too. But in the meantime, we got a cool thing. Ronj, I'm going to give you the floor because this is a great story that you found about the upcoming elections in November, and I would assume coming up in 2024 as well.
I know over the last several years, we've all been kind of concerned, if not just paying attention to interference in our election process and maybe how the country has been divided by, in part, outside forces. And Edward Isaac Dover is a journalist. He is a senior reporter for CNN. He's also been with the Atlantic and Politico in the past. He joins us now on KMOX. Good morning, Edward Isaac Dover. We appreciate you being with us.
It's great to be here.
All right, well, let's get to it, because you just wrote a couple of days ago about security officials here, Homeland and National Security officials with the U.S., who are concerned about the upcoming midterms and what Russia might do to continue to sow discontent. So what is the latest on it? Where are we at?
Well, so what this came from is, as you said, Homeland and National Security officials gaming out where things could go from what they're watching. They are stressing this as hypothetical at the moment. They haven't seen it. But what they're looking at is an evolution, a sophistication of Russian methods to undermine American democracy and turn Americans against each other. And a way that would be to have hackers go into local election offices all around the country, and the county clerk, the state board of elections, whatever it may be, and hack in a way that they actually get caught, do it on purpose, clumsily, to get caught, and then have the attention to that be fed into their much now more extensive and sophisticated disinformation networks, so that it creates this sort of anger conspiracy feedback loop that undermines the faith and the integrity of our elections even more. And obviously, there's quite a bit of that going around.
You know, states, as we all know, run the elections, which is a protection against a centralized somehow election fraud, right? It's a safeguard. But when it comes to Russian interference, how does having elections run by the individual states make it easier or harder for Russia to mess with the systems?
Well, and it's not just states. It's at a county level and city level. There are about 8,000 election authorities around the country. And we usually don't think about that because, each one reports its way up to the state level or city level, if it's a mayor's race or whatever it may be. Rarely do we think about how each of these offices is there doing its work and therefore is vulnerable, is an opening in itself. And so one of the examples that was raised to me is you could have Russian intelligence go and just get the voter registration records that are in one of the local offices and post them online. Now, that in itself is not affecting the results of the election. But I'm sure could see how if information like that was taken out of what was supposed to be a secure system and put out publicly, that it would lead to a lot of questions and a lot of anxiety about where things are. And when I talk to local election officials, for example, I talked to the election supervisor in one of the most competitive counties in Georgia, of course, one of the most competitive states these days, mm-hmm. who said to me, I'm not a whiz at these things. I'm doing the best that I can. She told me that she relies on her IT guy, is taking courses with the Georgia Secretary of State's office online to try to keep up with things. But it's very hard for these local officials to be the safeguard against what could be a full-scale Russian intelligence operation.
Should we just assume moving forward that this is always going to be happening and that, that the process needs to reflect that? Because I don't see any reason for it to stop. And in this case, we're talking about Russia, but any number of other entities with the know-how to do these things could easily do the same thing, right?
Well, one of the things that I drew on in this reporting is an intelligence assessment that was produced by the Department of Homeland Security looking at top threats to the homeland for 2022. And it singled out Russia, China, and Iran and the things that they're doing. Of those three, the ones that were most focused on the elections was Russia, because they have had efforts over the last almost 10 years to do this that have proven successful to one degree or another. So it does seem this is going to be an ongoing concern. We will see how it evolves and changes over the next couple of months and over the years ahead. But one of the tricky things is for American officials is now how much do you talk about that Russia is trying to attack us, Russia is trying to exacerbate and exploit our divisions, when even talking about it can seem like a political statement in itself.
So what is Russia's end game here? Because we hear a lot the idea that they want to destabilize us. It's good for them. They like the idea of us turning on each other. What is really in it for them?
It's that. It's they want to undermine Americans' faith in America, Americans' faith in democracy, Americans' faith in each other. They want to basically knock America down a bunch of pegs in our own eyes and in the world's eyes by saying, look how many problems America is having, and look, they can't get along with themselves, and they say they have this great democracy and they can't even run it. It's all that stuff to undermine, denigrate America, to do what the term that military and intelligence officials use is asymmetric warfare. This is how they hurt this country, by doing things that don't require firing a single shot. And that the particular situation that we find ourselves in right now, of course, is that former President Trump has spent 2 years pushing these lies about the election being stolen, and a lot of his allies have supported that. And we see, whether it's the riot at the Capitol or in all sorts of other ways, how that has affected the way a lot of people think about politics. And so Russia is looking to exploit and play off of all of that.
Yeah, it's in the piece that you write for CNN, you do note these specifics that while in 2016, a lot of the hacking was probing, looking for openings, and there was rudimentary disinformation campaigns, but they focused on what you said, racial divisions, disappointment in candidates losing, and now they could add in immigration, COVID-19 restrictions, and 2020 election conspiracies. All of these things that are tearing Americans apart. And the Russians are watching gleefully, like their brilliant plan is working.
Yeah, and just to be clear, the feeding in more conspiracies or exploiting the existing ones about COVID-19 and immigration and the 2020 election have already been part of what Russia is doing. And this would be to take it to the next stage of it. And again, if the goal here, which is how intelligence officials assess it, is to just make things worse for all of us, make us feel worse about everything and more at each other's throats, then when they see the opportunities of things that are already putting us on edge and are already putting us at each other's throats, then it creates more opportunities.
How do we fix it?
Well, it's a tricky thing, right? And I asked that question to intelligence officials, and part of the reason why people spoke to me about it is because what they're saying is that we have to start figuring out how to have a public conversation in this country about this happening that isn't just about, hey, this is good for Republicans, or hey, this is good for Democrats, or it's bad for Democrats, or for Joe Biden or Donald Trump or whatever, but that it is a question of how we talk about that. First of all, our elections are more secure than they've ever been, realistically. But at the same time, there are a lot of vulnerabilities, and there is definitely a lot of interest in exploiting those vulnerabilities and doing harmful things. And we need to all start having that be part of the way that we think about this in a real way.
And finally, just a quick close. I mean, does it mean that maybe more old school backup is the way to go? I know you mentioned in there that the Brennan Center for Justice noted that there were 93% of votes cast in 2020 were backed up on paper, which is more than it had been. Is it maybe just more of an emphasis, if not doing everything on paper, but making sure that there's a backup that's a hard copy?
Yeah, and I spoke to the election supervisor in Philadelphia, who obviously in Philadelphia, they dealt with a lot of questions and conspiracies after the 2020 election. And she said to me, all of their systems are not connected to the internet. They made sure to have it all secure. There are all sorts of backups with that. But there is a need for more attention, more funding, more security measures to be taken. And it's also a question of how the federal government gets involved here without it seeming like Big Brother is coming in to run the elections. And the Homeland Security Department and others have been struggling with that too, because they don't want it to seem like they're overriding free speech things or anything like that. I spoke with the former intelligence chief at Homeland Security Department. He left in April, so was very much involved in these things. And it's just very hard in this environment in Washington right now, where everything is politicized, to have a conversation about things that are about threats to the homeland that are not about a campaign or a candidate winning or losing.
Edward Isaac DeVere is with us from CNN. We thank you for your time. Great work. Really, really fascinating piece. Sure, it took a lot of time to put it all together. We'll look forward to some of your follow-up reporting on that and other things. But thanks so much for doing this. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
And again, you can find him on Twitter, by the way, at Isaac DeVere. That's DoVere.
It's pretty twisted and brilliant, isn't it? To be Russia and say, here's what we're going to do. We're going to hack a local system somewhere. Hope it gets caught.
Right.
And then all the people who are already up in arms about the election process, thinking it's rigged or whatever, go, see, told you there's something wrong with it. It's just, it's absolutely twisted. That's how Russia sees it. And they're right.
The show, sponsored by Straight Realty, your St. Louis area experts. Why pay more than four? 314-441-4444.
This is the show.
The show continues on KMOX.
It's the show on KMOX. Chris Ranji, Amy Marks, of course, Kevin Wheeler with you here on a Wednesday.
Hey, guys, guess what?
I don't know. Is this good?
It's not a joke.
Okay, go ahead.
I have not seen the new Top Gun yet. Me.
Oh.
Top Gun was my favorite movie growing up for Halloween twice. I was Kelly McGillis.
I got a question.
You were
about
not
this.
Kelly McGillis. You were the character that she played in the movie.
That's true. Yes.
That would be a little weird. Be like, I'm this person.
Yeah. I got a question about this.
Sure.
So when you watched that version, right? Did
the new one or the old one?
The old one.
Well, she didn't see the new one yet.
Yeah, the old one.
Yeah.
Did they? Whoever allowed you to see it, Did they remove the part in the middle where they're at the...
The smoochy-woochie?
The smoochy part. They removed, right? You saw the G-rated version.
I saw the G-rated version, and it was super G-rated because this was back in the 80s. I was 5 when I saw it the first time, and my dad recorded it off the with the VHS. And you know how you'd try to stop it just before the commercial breaks so that you wouldn't get the commercials?
Yeah.
So it was already edited for TV.
Uh-huh.
And then edited again by my dad. So it was pretty G-rated, the version I saw.
And then all the
innuendo went over my head because I was 5.
Yeah.
So you haven't seen the NC-17 version yet?
I have.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Okay.
And what's funny...
NC-17...
I don't know. It's not, yeah. Is it? First of all, is that still a rating?
I don't know.
The R version. But they played Top Gun at the Forest Park movie night. And it was hilarious because there were a lot of families there. So then when the smoochy-woochie happened, you heard a bunch of parents go, "Don't look. Cover your eyes."
It was on TV the other day. I can't remember what network it was. And I remember because I used to love that movie. And so when it was on regular TV, I know that was like kind of edited out. Like they shortened that scene.
Yeah.
You didn't get to see all of it.
I was curious,
okay, it's 2022. What version are they showing now? Like, do they just have that old, you know, 80s version of it? And no, they left the whole thing in now. And then you look at it and it's like, that's a whole lot tamer than I thought it was.
Are you are you waiting for the edited version to see the new one?
No, she is.
Yeah, she is.
Wait for the TV cut?
No, I just have, for whatever reason, I haven't gone yet. I blame you guys and the show, and I had a marathon.
Oh yeah, it's our fault, of course.
Yeah.
I mean,
Amy,
I saw it.
I'm a big finger
and I didn't
pointer.
Like the first one.
See, Kevin and
did
I
did you see it, Ronch?
The new one? No. Yeah. No, not yet.
What's
you
wrong
guys
with
gave
you?
Me all of the hell in the world, and now
well,
I'm
it's
the only
it's
one.
It's because you went to see it, and now we're screwed.
And I will say, there were a few nights that
we were all
going
to go together,
okay,
and then we lost momentum.
I remember, because Ronja and I were pretty sad, because Kevin decided to go with Susan, and not with us.
Yeah, God forbid, I want to go on a date with my wife.
Okay. Well, and then Ronja...
Instead of you dopes, I got to see 4 hours a day anyway.
But then Ronja and I said, why don't we go with you and Susan?
You could have.
Well, you didn't
invite
us.
You said no.
You did say no.
You never figured out how to do it.
Oh, you wanted us to...
It was a game. I told you guys, if you could find where we are, I even sent you a picture.
In my defense, the few nights that I thought, I'm going to go see the movie, it was sold out. You have to plan ahead to see the new Top Gun. Why are you looking at me like that, Kevin Wheeler?
I don't know. You guys just seem so psyched about it, and now you're like...
Yeah, like excuse makers?
No, ruined.
Exactly.
You ruined it.
I mean, let's be honest. You know, you have time.
You ruined it.
You telling me you haven't watched any TV shows in that time that you could have spent...
Oh, yeah, I did.
...going and watching a movie?
I did, totally.
So what you're saying is you guys just did that to make me go do the see the thing.
So, and this is a thing, too, because Kevin and I...
You did the Russia thing. You played me.
I did. I totally played you. Kevin
Wait,
and I...
That's what we're doing. We're trying to sow discord and division among ourselves.
You made me think it was my idea to do that.
That's exactly what I did.
Dang you guys.
So Kevin and I last week were talking about how we need to, you know, let's talk about more of the pop culture stuff that we really enjoy.
Like the big TV shows.
The big things.
Yeah.
And then we realized we can't do this because Amy hasn't seen anything but Star Wars.
And the Mandalorian.
How are we going to do it? Anything Star Wars. See? We have to make Amy watch real TV now.
Oh, we're going to try. We'll make sure we edit it for you.
This is America. You can't make me watch that.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.